CliffCentral.com.
Yes, indeed. CliffCentral.com. Tuesday morning, we've got Bulelo and Lebang here with us. And you, most importantly, you can comment. You can let us know what's up on the YouTube comments. You can also send us an email if you'd prefer on Gareth@CliffCentral.com. Here's Kirtan who says, good morning. Let's laugh all day or smile. It will make someone's day perfect. Well, that's a nice idea. I wonder if we can do that. I think we can do that. We can add a little bit of smile and laughter to other people's lives. That's a good thing to do. I don't have a problem with that. I think we're all agreed. All right, Curtin, there we go. I'm going to do that. Tracy says, Jim Jefferies, Ricky Gervais, George Carlin, they offend because they speak the truth, which some people just can't face or deal with. Yeah, we were talking about the clip that I just played a moment ago of Jerry Seinfeld, Bill Burr, and John Cleese just talking about how hard it is to do comedy these days if we allow the most sensitive people in society to determine what isn't allowed in the public discourse. And listen, sensitive people are necessary, right? They help us to figure out when we're getting close to territory that probably requires attention. So I think those sensitive people are probably important canaries in the coal mine for when really bad things might happen further down the line. But we certainly can't allow those people. I mean, it's very easy to avoid comedians if you find comedians offensive. Just don't go to comedy clubs and don't watch comedy specials. This always used to be a problem for me on radio. It's like there'd be some person somewhere who'd complain about something I'd said on the radio. I always thought, you don't have to listen. Like, there's other stuff for you to listen to. So your first port of call if you're offended by something is stop listening to that. But the idea that now you have to get it off everyone else's menu too is where I think a lot of people just get lost. It's like, you don't have the right to do that. You don't have the right to prevent everyone else from hearing something just because you don't like it. And that's where I love that Dave Chappelle and people like him. I don't know if you heard this story. This is quite a big deal in America at the moment. But the guy called David Portnoy, who started Barstool Sports. Do you know him?
Oh, yeah.
So this guy. Okay. Well, you know who this guy is, Lebang?
Of course. He took a company from YouTube a little bit, sport a little bit, were yakking it up to being listed.
Right.
He got Barstool is listed. Right. That's who Dave Portnoy is.
So he's worth a couple of $100 million now, and he's living large. He's probably about my age. He's in his 40s. And he's a bit of a cad. Like, he definitely enjoys the company of much younger, much prettier women. And he was on Instagram or something, and either he messaged or one of these Instagram models messaged him. And he was like, hey, you look kind of nice. And she was like, hey, you that rich guy from Barstool Sports. And he was like, yeah, why don't you come visit me? And she's like, yeah, I'd like that. And so he says to her, what are your sexual fantasies? And she says, oh, you know, I've got a couple of like dirty fantasies. I might even have a rape fantasy. And the guy's like, ooh, we'd have to definitely get to know each other better if that's your fantasy. Anyway. So she seems totally keen to meet up with this dude. And they eventually arrange it. She gets flown to him first class and gets put up in his mansion in Martha's Vineyard. They end up having sex on the first night, not surprising. This is hookup culture. Second night, they do it again. Third night, he decides she's actually not his thing. So he books her a return ticket and, you know, he's like, he's being quite gentlemanly about it. He's like, oh, you know, you're right. And, you know, is there anything I can do for you and all the rest? Anyway, she goes back like for a long while. It's not an issue. So Business Insider, which is supposedly a reputable publication, has essentially stuck a reporter on the story to try and find stuff about Dave Portnoy. They clearly don't like him. And they're going around asking every woman who's ever met him if anything untoward has happened. And they then publish a story two, three weeks ago about how Dave Portnoy is into rough sex and stuff. There's no allegation of rape or anything like that, right? There's no charges have been laid. No one's asserting or trying to say that he took advantage of them. It was all very much consensual. But clearly some feelings have been hurt, and some of these girls are kind of annoyed that he didn't fall in love with them. And this one girl in particular, whose pseudonym is Madison or something, she told the story to Business Insider. And it's a bit of a stretch because it's not really a story. This is just people trying to hook up and essentially getting it right. She is the kind of girl who would be into a rich guy, and he's the kind of guy who would be into a good-looking girl. And they found each other. Anyway, the Business Insider thing is a bit scurrilous because what they've done is publish a headline, which is like, Dave Portnoy into like rough and aggressive sex. But then you have to pay to hear the rest of the article. So most people obviously don't. They just see the headline and they retweet that and pass it around. And Dave Portnoy has decided to fight back. So he sent he sent screenshots. You've seen the story clearly. He
of course. He's one of my heroes. I love Portnoy.
All the messages that this girl has sent him and how much she was into it and how she was willing to fly over there at the drop of a hat. And she was totally like into the sex and it was all great. And he's not embarrassed at all. He says like, there's nothing, I have nothing to apologize for here. And he's refusing to budge and he's going after Business Insider, which I think he should do, because they're essentially defaming him and insinuating that there's something untoward about his sexual behavior. I just think this is an extremely bad situation for this young woman because it makes her look really, really terrible. It makes her look like she's precisely the kind of person who is into hookup culture, but then when it doesn't go her way, she's kind of willing to talk and expose and essentially defame a guy. So I hope he goes after her and I hope he goes after Business Insider and he proves once and for all that this is the kind of thing that will happen if you take part in hookup culture. This is what's going to go on.
Portnoy doesn't play that. So he had a thing with Microsoft and so in this case, he released two videos on Twitter as he was revealing all of the screenshots. Like Portnoy doesn't play that. Microsoft tried to have a go at him at a while back. Yeah. Portnoy's right on it. ESPN tried to have a go at him. I mean, this is Disney. Portnoy says no. And he comes out and he'll faces a camera and he doesn't play that nonsense of trial by media or whatever. He jumps straight on it and he's a straight talker, straight shooter, Boston guy. So there's no mucking about with him. So let's see how it turns out. But it's not looking good for the lady as it stands. But let's see how it shakes out.
Go ahead, Lebang.
Sorry, there's also this like responsibility that comes with actively participating in hookup culture. And this is the first time I'm hearing this term, hookup culture. Like it's if you set yourself up in that manner, if you're prepared to be flown out first class to another city and meet a person that you've really only spoken to online and say to this person, look, I'm happy to have sex with you. You need to know from the get-go that this is a hell of a risk, number one, and also take responsibility for whatever the fuck happens. You're clearly not here to fall in love. You're clearly not here to meet Prince Charming. You're here to smash and go. So smash and go. That's it. Take responsibility for that. That's it. And not a woman likes to cry afterwards and say, oh, but what exactly were you hoping for getting into that situation? Did you think he'd get on his knee and propose? Did you think he'd want to make you his wifey? This is tired.
Well, you know, just again, the reason I brought this story up is because we were talking about Dave Chappelle, who's refused to bend the knee. He's refused to be canceled, even though they've threatened him with all kinds of things. And, you know, he's been canceled here and there by... there was some special he was going to do or a movie he was going to release that's been put on the skids. And here you got Dave Portnoy and he's like, no, you're not going to cancel me either. I like this. I like that people are pushing back against this stuff. And I'm not a particular advocate for or fan of hookup culture. I don't have a problem with it either. If that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. You're a consenting adult. You can do whatever you like. But don't cry when it doesn't go your way, you know?
Yeah,
like that's where people have just got to be very realistic. And if he doesn't fall in love with you after you've basically just got together on social media, like Lebang says, like cry me a river. Nobody's going to be sitting there at your door feeling sorry for you. And I do think it's like it's really disgusting that Business Insider are so prepared to dig around for months. Apparently, they've been calling up every girl he's ever been with. to find one who's willing to tell a story that makes him look bad. That is like textbook defamation stuff. They're essentially trying to ruin his, they're trying to ruin his reputation. And I hope he sues them into bankruptcy. You know, there's that famous, tech billionaire, a guy called Peter Thiel, who also took on, he took on a bunch of, like gossip websites and things in the, I think it was the early 2000s or the late 2000s. I can't even remember. And he also won against them. And, you know, you just got to stand up for yourself because this kind of stuff is, it goes from a place of being like harmless gossip to being a place that actually starts damaging your business. I mean, like Portnoy was saying, his share price has been affected by this. And it'll obviously recover in the long run. But just like we say, you should take every woman's allegation seriously. And by the way, again, I'm going to say this was not a rape allegation. No one said anything about any serious sexual aggression of, you know, the non-consensual kind. There's nothing criminal that's happened here. But this story is just so, like, it's such an obvious attempt to rubbish a person. And I think that's really dangerous.
Portnoy is everything they hate right now.
Yeah.
White, male, a winner. And he's like, the thing is, every time they come for him, he just keeps winning. Barstool keeps growing.
Right.
He's everything they hate. And he's also brash. So Portnoy's also, he's a lightning rod. And he's what, 400 million that he's worth. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Robin says, yeah, sex on the first date. Ha ha ha. Yeah, correct.
Hey, at least they didn't have body parts in his fridge. I mean,
that could be a lot worse. Snae Zulu says she clearly wasn't there for that, Lebang. She hoped for something more. Yeah.
Of which,
that's where
gets
the problem comes.
I think the bigger problem is that there are people that actually end up in situations that are life-threatening and that are, you know, dangerous. And it just boggles my mind that women are willing to put themselves in these situations. And then when somebody who's actually been through some real shit says something, it's almost like, yeah, but we know your kind.
Right.
Yeah, we know your type. That is where it becomes an issue. Because you ultimately, you know, you're making my real matter now.
Trivial.
You're making my real trauma just, you know, like menial because you went and hopped on a plane and decided to go get banged on the other side of the country.
Right.
And came back with nothing. It's nonsense.
Well, it has the effect, is precisely what Lebang is saying, of diminishing the real dangerous stuff that some women are going through. And we talk often in this country about GBV. But if you're going to make a mockery of that by this story that we've just told you about this, you know, this guy from Barstool Sports, then it just kind of, it does not help. In fact, it hinders the cause of so many women who have really serious problems that they're dealing with and really dangerous men in society who should be brought to book. You make the trivial important and you make the important trivial. That's what you do when this kind of thing happens. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, again, Business Insider deserve the lion's share of criticism for this because this girl may just have carried on living her life and gone, I had sex with a billionaire once. But they dug and dug and dug and made her tell a story that frankly is just, it's private. There's no reason that any of us should know that story. There's no reason that any of us should be party to that story. Nothing criminal happened. And it is not something that she would have automatically got front page news coverage for if they hadn't dug around and tried to make it about a very rich man. And I'm telling you, we're going to see more of these. But I like Dave Chappelle fighting back. I like this guy fighting back. I like all these people who are starting to say, not going to happen. Robin says, I once had a car accident from driving after my drink was spiked. Chase those guys rather. Yeah. This is happening in places in South Africa right now. I heard a story, this is about a year and a half ago. And so obviously when the incident itself occurred, it must have been before, you know, COVID, about this certain bar where girls were getting spiked left, right, and center. And people were just, it was like common knowledge. And everyone is just talking about it. Like it's no, that's just what happens there. Now, to me, I mean, any place that has that reputation, and it wasn't the venue's, it wasn't obviously the venue's fault. There were just dodgy men there. Those guys need to be rounded up and taken in. That's criminal. That's a problem. And I can't imagine, like, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday about how, as a guy, you don't think about these things because, you know, as a guy, you're like, well, if it's dark, I'll walk to my car. It's not an issue. You don't think about that. If there's two other guys on the side of the street, you're not necessarily extra wary. But if you're a woman, these are things you have to think about all the time. You pick up your drink at a bar if you're a woman. You don't know what's been put in there. These days, for all you know, the guy doesn't even have to pick up your drink, or you don't even have to put it down. He might put something in it without you even knowing. Men don't think about this stuff because we don't have to. And if there's any kind of privilege, then I suppose that's it, right? But it certainly doesn't take away the blame from the men who are behaving badly. Anyway, Robin says she still wants to
condoms.
Find out. Sorry?
Drink condoms, by the way. I said drink condoms for the fests. The real thing. I'm not being lewd or
crude. How does
crude.
A drink condom work again?
Please explain.
So it's to so just your straw or whatever in a drink, you can fit it in. But drink condoms are a real thing, please. I know festivals are coming up now. We've all been there, ladies, and I know it's unfair that we live in the world we live in, but the reality is, I know it sounds gross, but drink condoms, you know, no glove,
but
no
what love. What is it? Do you put it over the drink?
Yeah. From what I'm hearing, it's like you put a condom. If this is your straw, the condom will basically cover like that.
Yeah, and then it's tight against your straw.
Oh.
So then you can't access. Yeah.
So you can't, guys can't be moving and grooving like that.
Jesus,
yeah.
the lengths we have to go to keep predators away. Yes. I mean, it's,
right?
You know, I have to put a stupid condom on the top of your drink, walk around like an idiot with this just because there are assholes out there. That's ridiculous. But I mean, I get it. This is something that Robin says she can't wait to find this guy. She's still looking for him. Yeah, I would be with you on that front. We are going to talk to Kim Robertson-Smith, who's from the Smile Foundation just now. They do such unbelievable work, and we've had the Smile Foundation on Cliff Central before. So I'm looking forward to having her back on to talk about the incredible stuff that they do. And we'll get to that in just a moment or two. Are a couple of other things on the agenda for this morning. Lebang is having a pre-Christmas lunch with her family. This is going to be a biggie, right? You're having the whole extended family. It's going to be a big one.
Well, ironically, no. It's literally just me, my mom, my dad, and my two brothers. But the trick is that we actually haven't been in the same room together for like over 8-9 years.
Ooh.
So that's like, I know.
Uh-oh.
I'm so nervous. Like, I'm just hoping that, like, you know, we can all be civil and, like, let there be peace on earth and, like, nobody's going to bring out, like, old things. And it was a lot to actually make happen. I basically had to beg my dad. I was like, look, dude, I've got 4 kids now. You only know 2. Just come on, come through and meet your grandkids. I had to like coax them in. And then we agreed that, okay, cool, do it at the house. So my mom is like way excited. Everyone's excited. I'm so nervous just because like everybody's so grown up now. And because you haven't had conversations all together, it's you never know what can happen. But I've got good hopes that we'll all be there smiling and happy.
It's probably going to go fine, but what's your worst case scenario is that a fight breaks out?
not a fight per se, but just like a difficult like tension, because there's a lot of things that we haven't spoken about. Mm-hmm. You know, over the years, nobody's really confronted things and said, you did this, you did that, why did you do this, why did you do that? So I am a little bit worried that there's going to be a little bit of like sneak dissing. Like, oh yeah, well, under the carpet kind of thing. And then it's just going to get like weird. Because we all kind of suck at confrontation. Not a single person in my family can sit there and say, you know, you upset me on this day, but it's fine, I forgive you. We all just kind of let things go and we just don't confront them. So it's going to be quite tense. I will give you guys feedback. It's this Sunday. just pray for me, y'all. Pray for me. I'm more worried about myself. Like, will I be able to keep my cool? Will I be able to sit there and laugh and be merry knowing that actually But I mean, my parents are getting old, man. They're like in their 60s. And I figure, let me not harbor anything. And I hope my brothers as well feel the same way. Let's just try and let the past be the past and just move forward. And whatever time we've got left together, let's just make the most of it. So
that's amazing. That's amazing.
We'll see.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be
it. Whose house is it at? Because that is
my
quite
mom's place. And my mom's a bad. Yes. My mom's a baddie. She lives in like a 7-bedroom mansion. She's chilling. Like, she's cool. You know, she's happy to have us all there.
Yep.
But it's just like, you know, my dad hasn't been there in a very long time. So it's going to be welcome. How's it?
Sandile says, have Dr. Hanan on Zoom during the day. When you're going to need him.
Please. Please. I beg you.
Yeah.
Have him on standby. Honestly, if I could, I would.
Ricochet Music says, live stream it. We dare you. Yeah.
Yo, oh, man. I wish. I remember being young and having this, like, dream of having a TV show called Keeping Up with the Khosanas, and that was going to be like our reality TV show, and it was going to be so dramatic.
Oh, man.
But also, like, you know, it's like having a black South African family like exposed like that at that time. No, it wasn't going to work. But yeah, guys, I can only hope for the best, to be honest. I mean, we'll see.
Listen, you're not alone. This is exactly the time of year where so many people have to kind of get together with family and the extended family and even those people in the family that they don't necessarily love the most. And it can be a very tense time. Everybody always goes, you know, your first assumption is, it's the best time of the year because you get together and everybody's having a happy time and you're laughing and there's presents and there's food. But for some people, it's a very, very tough time. They have to put aside their differences. They have to pretend that they get along. I mean, it's nice for your kids at least, because then they can feel like they're part of a bigger tribe, which is, I mean, it gives you a sense of identity and it's kind of special. And, you know, they will have memories then of the more you get together with the parents and the grandparents, the more they'll have good memories and interesting thoughts and be able to interact with these people. Because, I mean, you don't want to
grow up. And really, it's for them.
Yeah, you don't want to grow up with regrets of, like, I didn't really know my grandfather or whatever, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, no, it really is for the kids more. Because I remember growing up and being surrounded by all sorts of family members, my grandparents, my granduncles. It was always a full house. So I loved that. So I don't want to rob my kids of that, even if it means sitting in a room with people that, you know, you haven't necessarily been on the best terms with. At some point, you just have to not make it about you and just keep it moving.
Well,
you know, if you're not a sibling, sorry, I just want to commend Lebang on this. If you're not a sibling, like, I'm really, really fortunate. I have one sister and she's rock star, emotionally intelligent, the opposite of me. So, like, we really have struck it lucky. Like, we've really struck it lucky. But somebody I grew up with, him and his brother, they used to be so close. And now every engagement is filled with such resent from both sides. And the thing is, I missed something. Like, guys, when did this happen? I've known both of you since I was 7.
Yeah.
What happened? And now it's sniping. It's this. It's now they're putting their mom in a position every time we have tea, like coffee at the house. They were a really big part of my upbringing, right? And it's like, what happened?
Yeah.
And sibling rivalry, unless you have the sibling thing, when it's ugly,
it can get very tricky, especially if, like, you've got like this grand plan for your life and that plan doesn't happen. You end up, you know, hating the people around you. You end up going like some sort of contempt towards the people closest to you, and you don't do it intentionally.
No.
But if you like, you hate yourself, the people that suffer the most are the people around you. So I'm lucky enough to have gone through that with my siblings, and we are on the other side of that now.
Yeah.
We love each other. We've always loved each other. We fought, we've kissed, we've made up. We are in such a good place. Now it's just, let's get the parents on board.
Be married. You know, sometimes there are like stepmothers and stepfathers and those come into it, and it gets complicated. Tony says, I dread the festive season because of family differences. Oh, you have my sympathy.
But what do you do? Like, you can't, like, family is important. Yeah. Like,
you know what? I mean, Ricochet is saying here, like, now super maxed by the vax. I mean, this is another thing, is that you get together during the festive season and then people argue about politics or about coronavirus. And I'm not keen on that. That I don't want to do.
Yeah, look, it's one day a year, guys. We just keep it moving.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you've gone and created another day.
Drunk uncle, yer.
A drunkle is a real problem.
A drunkle, yo.
Yo, ish.
Legs. Yeah. Yeah. Now we got to...
Yeah. Snae says it's much worse, Simbulela, when your mother is the one causing the tension between siblings. Yo. That's not good.
My.
And that's real.
Dr. Robin says this is going to be my first Christmas as an orphan, and I'm working, and neither of my brothers are going to be around. So that sounds a bit sad, Robin, but you'll find a way to make it work. At least as a doctor working over Christmas, you're putting in some important time for people who are going to need you. So it's not as if you're not needed. That would be much worse, Robin. Imagine waking up and nobody cares that you're there or not there at Christmas. I mean, if you're busy working, it's because people need you. Family dynamics make life fun, says Daniela. Enjoy. My sister is in, and every time her mother flies in to visit, she needs to go to therapy leading up to the mother's visit. Yo.
A focused queen.
Jeez.
She's like preparing herself mentally, like, Husa.
I've often written on the show, says Snae, about how horrible my mother is. I'm not interested in seeing her over Christmas.
I boo.
Damn.
Yeah. Oh, be strong. Yeah. Be strong. Uzoba strong.
Sisters.
Sorry, girl.
All right, let's take a moment to turn our attention to something which is a really worthy thing to think about. And Kim Robertson-Smith is from the Smile Foundation. Now, back in October 2020, little Olivia was born with a cleft lip and palate. And this happens quite often, actually. 7 months later, her much-needed surgery to repair her cleft palate was compromised due to a fire at, you'll remember this, at the Charlotte Maxeke Hospital. You remember where she was due to be operated on? The anxious family's woes were further compounded by a backlog of elective surgeries that's been brought around by the COVID-19 pandemic. So all of this is going on. Kim Robertson-Smith, who joins us in a second, is a registered nurse and a healthcare professional, has been involved with the Smile Foundation since its inception, and she's here to tell us a little bit more. So, Kim, welcome to the show. Nice to see you. How are you?
Hi. Thanks, Gareth. I'm very well. Thank you.
Good. I just want to quickly remind people of all the things that the Smile Foundation does, because we have had the Smile Foundation on Cliff Central a few times over the years, and Mark Lubner, and I know about his involvement, which is extraordinary. But just remind us what the Smile Foundation is and how it came about, and what exactly it is you do there.
I'm the general manager for the Smile Foundation. I started with Smile 4 months ago. So I'm pretty new to it, but okay. I have been involved with Smile for 20 years, as long as Smile has been around. So Smile was started 20 years ago when a mom was desperate for her child to have some help, because her child was born with Möbius syndrome, which means that the nerves in her face didn't work, so she couldn't smile. And this mother started writing letters to then President Nelson Mandela to say, please help. I need help for my child.
Yeah.
And she wrote a letter every month until one letter eventually landed up in Nelson Mandela's personal mail. And he then decided he was going to do something about this, as he did. And he phoned Mark Lubner, our executive director, and said to Mark, listen, I have this child. I need something done. Can you help? So Mark then approached then Prof. Saris, who was the head of plastics at Charlotte Maxeke, and said to him, we need help. Can you help us? Mm. And he said, fine, let's do something. So at that time, there were no skilled surgeons in South Africa who could actually do this surgery.
Well, it's face, so they it's flew face some, surgery. It's, this is sorry? Hard. Face surgery is very hard to do. I mean, you need to... And obviously the people who do plastic surgery are not the same people who do the ear, nose and throat stuff. And it's all quite a complicated process, and it's costly too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. It is very costly. So anyway, they flew surgeons out and they did the surgery. Hmm. I happened to be in theater at the time, And so the Smile Foundation was born. And then they realized there's so many kids, there's such a backlog of kids that need surgery.
Yeah.
And so Mark created the Smile Foundation.
And I mean, the idea.
And here we are, 20 years later.
And the idea is to allow these kids to smile, because many of them can't because of these various conditions. They have cleft palates and facial nerve issues and an inability to move the muscles in that part of the face. And obviously, a lot of it is very straightforward and can be dealt with quite easily if you manage to get the kids in and help and operate on them early. And some of it's a lot more complex, but really, the Smile Foundation has done extraordinary work, and with many, many kids. I don't know what the total numbers are at this stage, but there's a ward, thank goodness, at Charlotte Macleke. And obviously, with that fire that we had, there were some massive backlogs. Do you want to tell us how things have been in the most recent past with COVID and everything else? It must have been much harder to get this done.
We have a backlog of 248 kids just in Gauteng at the moment. And so it's a big backlog. And we're trying to get that sorted out at the moment. And a lot of that is due to the fire and due to COVID. Because 1 in 1,000 kids is born with a cleft lip and palate. And if you think about it, a child who doesn't have the surgery early can't learn to speak because you use your palate to speak.
Yes.
So the longer the surgery is delayed, the worse it makes it, because these kids battle to eat. They get infections in their ears because they just don't have that palate there. So they need that surgery as soon as possible. So normally we do the first surgery within 3 months and the second surgery within 6 months. So in the case of little Olivia, she's a year old now, and we've only just managed to get her surgery done.
Sure.
So it's there's a long waiting list. It's all over the country because we actually work in 11 provinces, in 11 government hospitals. With Smile.
I'll tell you what you can't say without a palate is Charlotte Makaike. You can't do that without a palate. That's pretty damn tough. So just tell us quickly, how many kids has the Smile Foundation helped over the years?
We've helped over 4,000 children over the years to get a smile.
Wonderful.
And we've now branched out into burns. Kids who have burns, we assist them. We have lasers at Chris Hani Baragwanath that we've supplied, and Red Cross Children's Hospital, and that helps for the burn scarring and that kind of thing as well. So, yeah, we've helped a lot of kids, and we plan to do a lot more.
So obviously, in setting up this foundation, and Mark Lubner's played such an important and pivotal role in it, and obviously he himself has donated, many millions of rands to the cause, which obviously we thank God for people like him. But obviously also ordinary people like us can get involved, and we don't have to have millions. We can probably make smaller donations, and we can probably do other things. So how can the rest of us in South Africa get involved and help these kids?
Gareth, if you go onto the Smile Foundation website, so smilefoundation.co.za, there's a button there to click for a donation.
Right.
And also, if anybody knows of children who actually have this disability or have facial disabilities, also to go onto our same website and let us know so we can reach out and help these kids as well. Because a lot of these children can't actually get to the hospitals. And we will reach out and assist them. And also, we have a collaboration at the moment with Crema for Olivia, where they are doing anybody who goes to Crema for their nails, they're donating a portion of that to the Smile Foundation. So in the last month, they've already raised 40,000 rand towards Olivia's surgeries, which makes a huge difference.
That's terrific. Yeah, it's so great when, business gets involved in these things too, because so often they're the ones who can get more people involved and activate things, and in store there are all kinds of things they can throw into specials where a proportion of it gets donated. And in this case, this is terrific. So Olivia, you say she has been operated on?
Yes, we got Olivia operated on this month. We're going to have the reveal in a week's time. We just wanted her to heal a little bit. So what I wanted to do was get Olivia's surgery done just before her first birthday. And thanks to the great surgeons, Prof. Tim Christofidis at Charlotte Makeke, we did manage to get her surgery done. She's healing beautifully. So this is just the first surgery of three, because the second surgery will probably happen around February, March, and that'll be her soft palate. And then the third surgery will then be her hard palate. So she's only had her lip repaired because Olivia's got a bilateral cleft. I don't know if you've seen some of the pictures of her.
No.
So she had a bilateral cleft. Oh, she's such a cutie. And, well, they're all cuties, but Olivia very much so. And so they've now repaired her lip, so she's now got a very cute cutie pie lip. And we will do the reveal in a week's time when all her stitches are out and everything. So in a week's time, we'll go live with the pictures of Olivia and her healing so beautifully.
I think that's great. All right. Well, keep up the good work that you do, Kim. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Kim Robertson-Smith, the Smile Foundation. You can find out more at smilefoundation.co.za. And if you have, you know, a couple of spare cents lying around just before the holidays, this could be a very worthy cause. They do so much for so many kids. And, you know, if we're not looking after our kids, what the hell are we looking after? That's the most important place to spend our time and effort and money. So good stuff. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you so much. Joy is always possible and every child deserves to smile.
I love it. Thank you very much. It's great work that they do. Isn't that nice? These are the people are the people who quietly in the background keep on doing good and helping so many kids. And again, like if you think your life is tough, can you imagine being born with, you know, some kind of facial deformity or a cleft palate or anything else? That's a massive disadvantage right from the get go. Anyway, so a couple of things here. There's a big debate going on between the comments or in the comments about Snaya's terrible mother and how awful she is and the advice that she's already been given by Dr. Hanan to limit communication with her mom. I mean, you know, it's easy for us to laugh. Snaya says, for example, Dr. Hanan recommended I limit communication with my mom. I wrote on the show about it. Can't remember which episode, but even Gareth was shocked by how vile she is. Even Gareth.
Even
I was shocked by how vile. So I'm sorry about that.
But it's actually not funny, and I think we don't actually have this conversation often enough about Snaya, please assist me here, about black tax. And if you refuse to give your family black tax, you are ostracized, you are alienated, you are the enemy. Because if you're not giving me your money, who are you giving money to? It's such a it's a big issue, and a lot of people suffer from that and have to go to bed every night feeling like they've done something wrong because maybe they're not giving their family enough money. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And nobody deserves, that's what I always say, like, I'll never share with my parents how much I actually earn. I'll just give them a nice round number. I'll round it off to the lowest 10. Just so that they
Boma 5,000.
Boma 5,000. After debts and school fees and I'm left with nothing. The less they know, something. The better. Because the minute you
tell them, something.
Ah, it's over. Hey, you know my curtains. I need new. I need new. Like clockwork. So for your own sanity, just boundaries, babes, boundaries. Yeah,
that's a real thing here. And we don't talk about it enough in South Africa, but it's something that puts enormous pressure on a generation of people who are trying their best to make it in the world. There are enough pressures. There are enough reasons for them to have money to put in certain places whenever they do actually have money. And then there's this black tax too, which, I mean, it's a real thing and it's a big problem in South Africa. I don't know how people deal with it. I mean, you say you don't tell your parents everything about what you earn, but then, you know, some people are in the fortunate position where their parents are also financially independent, but that's the minority. Like the majority of people that they are having to send money home. And let's not even talk about the people who come from other countries like Zimbabwe or whatever, where you have to send cash home every week. And if it wasn't for these apps and things, that cash would be stolen en route, which it used to be all the time. So these are very, very tough things. I think it's a whole other pressure that if you don't have it, you just have no idea.
Yeah, you have to manage it. You have to, as with any, because it can very quickly descend into crisis. And I think it's what Lebang was almost saying there, is that because it's so sensitive, the more sensitive things, the more you actively have to manage it. And I'm trying to help my mom off the ledge because she doesn't know any other way as well. I had to call Lumtimbi, like on my mom's side of the family. I said, ladies and gentlemen, it's over. The well is shut. It is over. This tap is closed to all of you. And I had to put them all in a room where I'm around. Otherwise, you know, people try and go around and now. So now, like, mom, we need to see your bank statements every at the end of every month. We have a family meeting. If you don't manage that black tax mentality,
and you have to manage it. You mentioned before how many people your mum's put through university.
Hey, yeah, 17. And the last one's about to come through. Never asked for a cent back. And she did okay. She's not a wealthy person, but
That's the thing. So your mom will put people through university because this is family. It's all love and all of that. But that's not enough for them. They will always want more. That is the problem. The problem is, you know, thanks, but I also need, and I also need, and I also need. Why can't you just be happy with the little that I've given you? Take that and start your life. Nope. It's always, okay, now that you've put me through school, can you give me a car? Now that you put me through school, can you give me an apartment? Can you buy me groceries? It's just this rabbit hole. So once you can set that boundary.
This is real, and I'm not trying to equivocate here, there are also, this happens in all families. This is not a South African black tax thing necessarily, but it happens in all families where there are some where there are some members of the family who just have no problem leveraging off everyone else. I mean, I know so many stories of people who are just, they're happy to take the money from the one breadwinner or the one person who's actually got a job, and that person is maybe not making millions, you know, they're not hugely well off, but the rest of the family are like, nah, we'll have some of that. And eventually you give this much and they end up taking that much. So it's not fun.
You have to manage it actively.
And it almost,
it
gets taken for granted, right? I mean, eventually, like, if you do switch off the tap, then you're a bad person.
Is the problem.
See, this is where I'm glad I'm my father's son. That's, you're going to try and make me feel emotionally guilty thing, myself and my father, we don't have that nonsense, right? It's like, for me, is I'm big on this. People will only treat you how you let them treat you. So for us, for this thing, my mom's just too much, nicey-nicey. No. And people struggle to say no because of guilt, because of whatever. And listen, people will say, when you start to put race into it, then they'll tell you how now you've left us behind, and they pull on the darkest strings. Yeah. You're not going to get me and my dad at that. And because they know now, in my family, they know the old man, Ngeke Glung, with him, they know very well. We don't even go there unless we have our ducks in a row. Now they're starting to see that. We're not playing that on my mom's side as well.
So Moonchild is asking, and this is a good question, is there a percentage of black tax that is acceptable?
That's a good question.
Don't know if anyone's done the calculations, but that it's really interesting, right?
A great question. I hadn't even thought of it like that.
Sifiso says, I pay tax begrudgingly. If it were up to me, I wouldn't pay it. So when I'm helping my family, it's not coerced, it's a blessing. Paying for my brother's varsity fees was a blessing, not a tax. One way to look at it.
But that's a different thing. Yeah, and I mean, that's more of an investment than a liability, right? It's like you're lifting a family member and they're doing something constructive. So that's always been my father's thing, right? Is you're not allowed to come and just ask for money and now... My dad doesn't play that. Are we sending you to school? Are you doing a qualification? Or just let's talk sense. My dad's all about let's talk sense. There's no, I've fallen upon hard times. Keep it moving. Yeah. And they know not to go to him.
This is such a great subject. I hope we don't run out of time for it, because there's also the other way around where the kids just live off the parents for way too long, like into their 30s and 40s, and the kids are still taking money off of their parents. I mean, that's just outrageous. Mm. You know, that's in the same way, that's bad. So Poesnae, she's also got a brother who graduated in 2013, never worked a day in his life, and I have to support that. Yes, sir.
See, that's the other side of the coin. So you take your siblings through school, they graduate, but they just don't work. It's either there's no jobs, it's either they're too lazy to go work, or whatever the reason is, but that now becomes your responsibility. It's your duty to look after this other grown human that you didn't even give birth to.
Listen to Dawn. Dawn says, I work 60 hours a week just so my mother can live and make constant financial demands. And that sounds really abusive too. Well, you know, I don't know the details, Dawn and Snae, but my God, it sounds like you guys are being, you're being made to work so that other people can live. That's not right. You are entitled to the fruits of your labor. If you decide, like Sifiso said, that it is a blessing to give that money away, that's fine. It's up to you. But if you're being forced to, if you feel, like Lebang was saying earlier, guilty if you don't, that's not right, hey? Oh, that is not right. Kabelo wants to know, what exactly is a black tax? Maybe there are still people who don't know what this is.
Mulelo, do you
want
to take this one?
I think the way I understand it, again, I'm not the president of black people, but the way I understand it is that essentially...
Thank God.
Oh, maybe stop eating amagwinya, was where we'd start.
Yeah,
I knew that would get you, Leva. But essentially is, I mean, we have a tricky country, the past, and many of our parents would have been educated to a level where they could only get to be laborers, and that affected the entire family, and the migrant culture has created a sort of in the homelands. And then there's also kind of people who live ekasi or in the township. So there's a big disconnect between being in the formal financial sector. And essentially, as black people, maybe we are now the first generation that are able to get formalized education, have the social currency to be in spaces where now you're starting to talk about residual income. Now what you got to do, people always talk about saving, is you now need to pay for aunt, uncle, gran, mom, and pay for their housing, their food for 12 months of the year, instead of just being able to worry about yourself.
I mean, like Carl might have hit on something really important here. Carl says, I'm not black, but if I was, I'd rather pay the black tax than normal tax. At least you know how it's being spent. That's a good point. Like, why should, if you're already supporting six people in your family and, you know, they're unemployed or whatever, why should you also have to pay the state tax? Like, I think there should be a certain amount of your income that is taxable. And if it's, let's say, 40%, which I think is way too high, but let's say it's 40%, then you could either elect to help out family and friends with that money, but you've got to be able to show that you're actually doing it. And I don't know how we would manage that. Or you can pay into state coffers because you know that's probably going to be stolen and misspent anyway. But the fact that you have to pay both if you are from a black family and you're the breadwinner is just, that seems really unfair to me. And I think Carl's making the point quite well. Daniela says, Gareth, you could do a whole show on this topic. It's such an important conversation. Well, it kind of just came up. It wasn't something we were going to bring up. But I think that's really cool that it did come up. Jared says, I didn't ask to come into this world, and if I made my riches off my own back, then no one else is going to get a cent. Well, Jared's made his decisions. You aren't going to get any money out of him. My heart breaks when I see so many young men standing on the corners wanting day jobs. It breaks my heart. Yeah, that's a very serious thing that we've got to deal with in this country. And don't think that that's going to keep on being okay. Like, at some point, things break. Jeremy says black tax can be overcome by having smaller or more compact families. Yeah, but that doesn't, I mean, people, again, like if you are in a family of, you know, an extended family of 20 or 30 people, you can't go backwards in time now and erase some of those people. So that's, you're dealing with what you're dealing with, Jeremy. I mean, I hear you, but, you know, I also know white families and rich people who have lots and lots of kids. It's not an excuse. And you don't want the government deciding who should and shouldn't have kids, do you? You don't want them making the rule. Like, Bulelo can have three, but Lebang can only have two. Please. That's nonsense. And sometimes those families that are bigger manage to support each other more. So I don't know that that's the best argument. I mean, it's one of the arguments. Same as entrepreneurs. They need their tax lowered to avoid employment for others. Well, there's a whole other discussion, but yes, Freedom Fighter, that's a good one. And Sfiso is going to have the last word for this morning. I think this topic is being oversimplified. If one was raised by a single mom, domestic worker, taking care of her when I've made it in life isn't a tax. I can't wrap my head around the tax part. Well, I mean, maybe, Sfiso, you just you're getting obsessed with the name, the idea of a black tax, but it's part of having to pay for other things and responsibilities. And some people take on those responsibilities, and some people have no choice but to take on those responsibilities. Cabello's saying,
and it sounds like he wants to.
Yeah, it sounds like
right. You must be very clear. Is where it gets murky is when you start getting guilted. For him and his brother, I think he put through university and his mom.
Mm-hmm.
But that sounds like you want to. That then it's not a tax.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
Cabello's saying also this topic needs a whole 2 hours. Well. Good luck with your family lunch on Sunday, Lebang. Hopefully finances don't come into it. But
Yay.
And you know, parents, and they'll do this one. You know it's coming. He sends me money, this one. And they'll bring up the number. Yeah, he sent me 5,000. We know what you're doing. I know my family. They'll do that as well.
I'll just remind them that they had the same 24 hours as Patrice Motsepe. What were they doing? When Patrice Motsepe was hustling, what were y'all doing? So please.
I just want to come to this point from Ruth. Ruth says, but Gareth, kids have always been dependent on parents. Look how dependent women were back in the 1800s. Yes, that is a good point. But I think there is definitely something wrong with a child in their any child past 25 who is still reliant on their parents. I think there's a problem. I'm willing to say 30 because I know that there are only a few jobs available in this country and we've got a massive unemployment crisis. But I reckon if you haven't found something gainful to do in your life by 30 and you're still living with your parents and you still expect money from them, pocket money from your parents at 30, there's something very wrong with that situation. I don't care whether you come from a privileged household and it's your parents just, you know, shelling out cash, or you come from a really poor household where your parents have to support you because there's just nothing else that you can get money from. Either way, I think it's wrong. And for kids to still be dependent on parents is way worse in my book than when parents are dependent on kids.
And I was that guy, so I can speak to this one until I was 28, right? I was that guy. So I can tell you how much I agree with what you're saying is that it's madness in hindsight, what I was putting on my parents. Wait a table, do something, especially the middle-class life I was given. So do something, chief. Yeah. You know, with parents, I can only speak to mothers. Mothers are the most reasonable animals in the world if they're on your side. Mm. Even if I was bringing home 2,000 rand from waiting at a table instead of lying, you know, being a freaking knobhead, which I was, my mother would have been fine with
watching
it. You know what I mean? You can't just be now sloth the whole day playing TV games and eating. That I find unacceptable. And your mother, even if you bring 2,000 rand home and you give her 500 bucks, trust me, that will be enough.
But also mothers must also stop coddling. This thing of coddling sons must stop.
Hey.
Because you
Lebang, is this a prelude for Sunday? Uh-oh, it's already coming out.
I think we need to stream this live. This is going to be wild.
Lebang, I just got a prelude into what Sunday's.
Just stop cuddling your grown-ass sons and just let them go into the world and get their own lives.
Well,
because they need to.
You've just scratched open another big discussion topic. Now we really, I mean, this is where we need a whole other show because this actually came up in my discussion with Jerry Mofokeng, because he said he reckons part of the problem in South Africa is that there are these mums and sisters and daughters who coddle these men, grown men, and treat them like boys and make excuses for them and all that kind of thing. And that's a South African thing, and that's something we've got to talk about. We've got to get into this.
Sunday's going to be lit. Sunday's going to be lit.
Next week on Dragon Ball Z. Next week on Dragon Ball Z, we have to unpack this.
Now that I've heard what's on the surface there, Lebang, you have to keep us updated. Yo.
Sunday's in order.
Yeah. Melissa says, where's Melissa here? She says, my brother is 30, two kids still living at home. Ugh.
Two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
So the brother is 30, has two kids, and is still living at home with the parents. So the grandparents.
Oh, what?
Yeah, that's.
So are the kids also living with him at home with the grandparents?
I would assume so. It is what it is, says, as a brown parent, my kids wouldn't dare tell me they didn't ask to be born. I sense some claps coming there.
No, I must tell you, that was a shock for me. Like when I moved to Joburg when I was really young, going to white families where white kids are saying, "Oh, mom, geez, just get out my room. Wait a minute.
Whoa, what?
Because then I'm expecting mom to walk in clap. And now it's about to be Mortal Kombat. Yeah. No, nothing. Uh-uh. Oh, mom, we're starving. Could you make those sandwiches? Chief, what are you
clap?
Oh
my God.
God, don't you worry about her, Brie. She's so annoying.
Dude.
In my house.
Not a chance, dude. Not in my house either. Listen.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No. There would have been claps. First, my mother would be attacking me with her hands. And then second of all, she'd be saying, just wait till your father gets home. And that was much more scary. Anyway, this is going to be amazing for Lebang Sunday's lunch, but we'll find out more on Life with Lebang. She's got a child psychologist on. Don't forget the MKT show today, and there's plenty more to come on cliffcentral.com. And also tomorrow, a brand new season of Blind History starts, so stick around for that. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Have an excellent day. Cheers, everybody.
cliffcentral.com